were it to shoot a call to indict Wall Street criminals and to have a
But this is where the money comes from for both parties in the midterm elections. They're hardly the Democrats going to take this on. And this rally was not about opposing the administration or the Democrats.
Right. But you don't have to oppose them. You can try to sort of kick them in the butt a little bit. And that's what was missing. In other words, if there's pressure on the right and no pressure on the left, the left is not going to be taken seriously as it has not been. Because the administration feels they can take people like us writ large for granted. You know, that they don't have to be responsive and accountable to the people who worked for them so hard to get Obama elected. And so it's not a question of just being in opposition to Obama. He's under terrible attack from, you know, various corners. You know, there's nothing he can do to please any of them. He's a terrorist. He's a socialist. He's a communist. He's a Martian. It doesn't seem to matter what they call him. The facts are immaterial. But the people who want to see this administration really push forward a progressive agenda have to do more than just rally on the mall. They have to organize. They have to try to build support for a program for change. And that so far has been missing.
Well, there wasn't the criticism of Wall Street in that way, and there wasn't much discussion of the war.
No, not at all. In other words, the challenges, the contradictions
Though
of this
Harry
administration.
Belafonte did talk about peace,
yeah,
and
did.
He did say he was the only one, really, who talked about $33 billion going to the war that could pay for 600,000 green jobs in this country.
Yeah, I mean, Jesse mentioned the military budget, but he didn't really explain it. And the assumption is rhetoric, you know, just the kind of our language. You know, we often assume that when we use a buzzword, people know what it is. Not necessarily. I think you have to really explain this. You can't assume knowledge. The media is not covering these issues thoroughly, and we have to, try to educate the base as well as motivate the base.
I want to thank you for being with us, Danny Schechter, author of The Crime of Our Time. The book is, that's his book, Plunder is the name of his film. He blogs at newsdissector.com. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is KBOO-FM, Portland. The time is 8 o'clock. Coming up next on More Talk Radio with hosts Celeste Carey and Cecil Prescott, they speak with Fatima Bhutto about her new book, Songs of Blood and Sword, A Daughter's Memoir.
KBOO was a proud media sponsor for Afghanistan 9 years later. Money for jobs and education, not war and occupation. This event takes place on October 9th at 11 a.m. on the park blocks near Portland State University, between Southwest Market and Clay. There will be a rally at 11 a.m., followed by a march at 11:30. This event is being hosted by Peace and Justice Works and Iraq Affinity Group. For more info, KBOO.FM/PJW.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. This is Monday, October 4th. This is More Talk Radio. My name is Cecil Prescott.
My name is Celeste Carey. And you, gentle listener, are tuned in to our More Talk Radio conversation here on your community connection, KBOO Portland, 90.7 here in the metro area. If you're in the Hood River area, that being actually Columbia River Gorge, you are listening at 91.9. In the Willamette Valley, it's 100.7. In the ether, it's KBOO.FM. Welcome indeed.
Joining us this morning is author, journalist, and poet Fatima Bhutto. And she has written her memoir. It is entitled Songs of Blood and Swords, A Daughter Memoir. It's just out from Nation's Book. She will speak this evening at an event sponsored by the World Affairs Council of Oregon at Powell City of Books at 7:30 p.m. That's 1005 West Burnside in Portland. Ms. Bhutto is an Afghan-born Pakistani poet and writer, memoir of the very famous family in Pakistan. Her memoirs tells of her family and the history of her country. We are so pleased to have you with us this morning.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Yes, thank you so much for joining us. And your memoir is a tightly, densely, vividly woven tapestry, a tapestry not just of your family and a history, but of your country's history.
Yes.
How was it to actually have to pull together all of these threads to make such a vivid recounting of life? And I imagine that you must have paid some kind of price to pull that forward.
Yes. Well, you know, it's the story of my family seems to run sort of parallel with the story of the country. And so it was impossible, I think, to tell one of those tales and not the other. That they have suffered together and they have rejoiced together and they really are Pakistan is another member almost of the family and story. And you know it was particularly difficult, I think, to write about one's own family rather than one's own country, especially because everyone who could have told me about my family is gone. All the people who I could have turned to for that kind of insight have been killed. So I had to be a sort of private investigator and to really go into finding my family through other routes and other narratives.
In weaving together this history, it involved some reflection. And you mentioned, you know, there's so much violence entwined with this story. Why did you decide to write it at this time?
Well, there's several reasons. I suppose the first really is that we live with this violence in Pakistan, not just in the family, but, assassinations are part of the Pakistani political ethic. And what accompanies that violence is a very high premium on silence. And we are simply told that we're not only meant to bear that kind of violence, but we are required to be quiet about it. Mm-hmm. And it was important for me, having witnessed so much of it within my own family, to break that that silence. And otherwise, you know, it was one of the last things I promised my father before he was killed, that I would tell his story. And I always knew I had to do it, but I never felt brave enough to manage it. So it took all this time, I think, to feel comfortable, to feel that I was ready to go out and retrace his life and ask questions, not just of him, but of these family members who I grew up loving and admiring and certainly fearing in some cases.
When you mention fear, I imagine that your relationship with your late aunt must have been mm-hmm. laced with a curious combination of fear and love.
Yes, it certainly was, especially because, you know, I was the first child born into the family, so I knew Benazir Bhutto as I knew her when she was a young woman before power happened to her. And she was a very different person then. She was, you know, incredibly vulnerable, very courageous. You know, she was a woman who was fighting against great odds for something that she believed in. And that woman was transformed by power, and not just once, but twice, you know, by not just access to power, but I think a certain entitlement to power. And the aunt that I knew then, who was prime minister, wasn't someone who had suffered under power, but was someone that was capable of causing great suffering. She was someone who was no longer accessible, but closed off. And certainly when you saw her through the eyes of her regime, she was very frightening.
Frightening, and yet I think I've read how, you know, when you were younger, there was some comparison between you and her.
Yes, I said in the book that since I was a child, it's used as a compliment and as an admonishment for people would say to me, "Oh, you're just like your aunt," and certainly, you know, there is, I suppose, very cosmetic similarities in that we are both the eldest children, we're both daughters, we're very close to our fathers, we both witnessed our father's murders, and perhaps that leads people to think there is a similarity. But I think what separates us is so much grander. You know, my aunt grew up the daughter of a president and prime minister. She grew up in government offices. I didn't. I grew up very much outside of power, and it might sound like a small difference, but I don't think it is at all. I think it's a huge gulf.
Your book is a meditation almost of not only the history and family, but a meditation, as you suggested, in terms of power and access to power and what it means. We'll continue talking about this and your relationship with your family, as it is so important a story, and we're so pleased to have you here with us. And all of you who are listening here, we'd so welcome you to call and continue our conversation here with Fatima. But first, we want to remind you that you are listening to KBOO-FM, your community radio station, and we are in the midst of an exciting time here in which we encourage you to become members of this community radio station. And Lisa is going to tell you how to do that.
It's true. This is KBOO Community Radio, and this is our fabulous fall membership drive. And we are encouraging people to give us a call to invest in this station and invest in this kind of programming. And the number to call locally is 503-232-8818. We have a $600 goal for this show before 9 o'clock, and we would love to hear from you right away. 1-877-500-5266 is the toll-free number. I have to say, if you're anywhere in the neighborhood, more than ever, I want to encourage you to stop by in person. We are at 20 Southeast 8th Street in Portland, Oregon, half block south of Burnside. We have live in the studio right now, Fatima Bhutto. She is a member of the most famous family in Pakistan. And her new memoir, we're offering it up to you for a $75 minimum pledge. That's Songs of Blood and Sword, A Daughter's Memoir. From what I understand, it's a gorgeous book. And you're listening to her talk about it right here with our pals, Cecil and Celeste. $75 minimum pledge for that book. I understand it's a very thick, it's a very amazing tome there. And $75 a month, that's only $6.25 $6.25 a month, and that's a $75 a year contribution to KBOO. And we need you to stop by in person. Look in the studio. You know, you're always welcome to come in here. We're at 20 Southeast 8th Street in Portland, Oregon, half a block south of Burnside. And we need to hear the phones ring, 503-232-8818. You know, when you do give us a call, and you can also make a contribution online at kboo.fm. You're going to look in the upper right-hand corner and click on that tip jar there. When you give us a call and make a contribution, we can give you a gift right now. Like, for example, this wonderful, amazing book by Fatima Bhutto, Songs of Blood and Sword, A Daughter's Memoir. You'll get a book right away, and then after your membership money is processed, you get a card in the mail that entitles you to money off, discounts all over Cascadia for all kinds of services. And I have to say, you know, we give you a gift now, we give you discounts for the whole rest of the year, and we give you this amazing programming. And it's just win-win-win all around. It's actually a shrewd investment in your community. So give us a call, 503 1-800-232-8818 is the number to call, toll free outside the Portland area, 1-877-500-5266. We're listening to Cecil and Celeste speak with Fatima Bhutto and her new memoir, Songs of Blood and Sword, A Daughter's Memoir. This is an amazing book. We'd love to hear from you. Stop by in person, 20 Southeast 8th Street in Portland, Oregon. And we're ready to go back to the show, right? Thanks to the people who've called so far.
Hey, thank you so much, Lisa.
We're continuing our conversation with Fatima, who will speak this evening at Powell City of Books at 7:30 p.m. We left our conversation, you mentioning, talking about your aunt and that complex relationship, but it's made more complex than because of your very public statement and accusation of mm-hmm. her involvement with your father's assassination.
Yes, at the time that my father was killed, he was an elected member of the Provincial Assembly in Pakistan. And he was very critical of his sister's government. His sister Benazir was elected to the office of the prime ministership for the second time. And though her first government was removed on grounds of gross corruption and human rights abuses, it was really during her second when that went into full throttle. And at the time that my father was killed, my aunt had empowered the police forces and the security agencies in the city of Karachi, where we live, under Operation Cleanup, it was called, to do what it sounded like, to clean up the city. And in the year and a half period that Operation Cleanup was in effect, some 3,000 men were murdered in the city of Karachi. And my father was one of those people, but it was also the government's response in the aftermath of the murder that implicated them in my mind. Seven men were killed that night, and they were left to bleed to death on the roads. When they were moved, they were all taken to different locations, none to emergency hospitals. And immediately after that, all the witnesses and survivors of the assassination were arrested. They were held in jail without access to lawyers or to their families for 3 months until my aunt's government fell. While at the same time, the police were internally cleared in a police review and put back on their beats. And they were promoted within the ranks of my aunt's political party. Some of them were members of her party. And certainly within the government. And carrying on, it was also her government that stopped us from filing a police case, which is every citizen's rights in front of the Pakistani law. We had to go to the courts to have our rights returned to us. And further, we were stopped from filing criminal charges. And instead, the government put in place a tribunal that was to have no legal authority to pass sentence. They were not allowed to pass any verdict. But the tribunal ultimately concluded that the order to assassinate my father, Murtaza, could only have come from the highest level of government. And there was no one higher at the time than his sister, the prime minister.
And this was not a random shooting. Mm-mm. This was a orchestrated. Lights were shot out. They were caught at a specific bottleneck. And so there's a certain degree of planning, which, again, points to a certain direction.
Yes, absolutely. As you said, there were 70 to 100 policemen on the road that night. The lights were closed on the street that we live, or the street lights were shut. And the 70 Clifton, our home, is on a road that is also home to some consulates and embassies. So the British High Commission is across the road from us. The Italians are across the road, the Russians. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is not, it wasn't a darkened alleyway, and all the guards of these quite high-profile embassies were told to retreat within their premises while the police carried out this operation.
You're listening to More Talk Radio here on KBOO Portland. I am here, Celeste Carey, with my colleague, Cecil Prescott. We do invite your calls. We do hope that you will take a moment to stop by Membership Central first, but please do join us. The phone number is 503-231-8187 for conversation, and I've also got our web pages up, so if you wish to hit us, you know you can find us at moretalkradio@gmail.com. And you can join in the conversation here with Fatima Bhutto. One of the things that I hear weaving through this, and you mentioned this with regard to your aunt, mm-hmm. was this word entitlement, which to me speaks of dynasty, bloodlines, not just intrigue, but a persevering structure, dynamic of power How does that play out in not only your family's history, mm-hmm. but Pakistani politics?
Oh, well, that's a wonderful question. And certainly, you know, it is a country, a young country, that has really been held hostage by dynasty. And it's not unique. I mean, we know in the region that India, Bangladesh, Nepal, Sri Lanka, all these countries have suffered dynasty. But Pakistan really seems to be contained by it. You know, it's said that at the time of partition 63 years ago, the wealth of the country was controlled by 20 families. And that, you know, 63 years later, that number has increased to 27 families. So it's a dynasty that has taken control not just of the country's politics, but its financial world. You know, the military is a dynasty in some way. And it shouldn't have been that way, because actually, Zulfikar Ali Bhutto, my grandfather, in his first speech to the nation, he gave this wonderful speech, and he spoke in English, and he said, I'm embarrassed to be talking to you in English, but the world is watching us, and I feel I have to speak to them too. And he was very clear. He said, there will be no nepotism in this government. Mm. And he had quite a wicked sense of humor. And he said, but I have a talented cousin. And if you will allow me, I would like to bring him into the government, which he did. But there will be no nepotism. And, you know, those words now come back to us.
Yes. As you tell the story about your family and your country, it continues in terms of the how all of these things are related. Mm-hmm. Later on, your aunt was assassinated, and her husband became the head of the government. And recently, we've heard about his government, mm-hmm. but more importantly, I'd like to have some of your insights, because we heard about the floods in Pakistan, yes. and his role or his absence from the country, yeah. and we would like to hear some of your reflection on that, but I want to invite our listeners to become members of this radio station and help keep good programming like this on the air. So we're going to invite you to join us in this wonderful endeavor by becoming a member of this community radio station. And, you know, if you want to read this book, it's a fascinating read, Songs of Blood and Sword, a gift membership of $75 will get you this lovely book. And Lisa's going to tell you some more about how to reach us.
Yes. Thanks, Cecil. My name is Lisa Loving, and I'm here today just passing the hat for KBOO. This is our fabulous fall membership drive. We're asking people to pick up the phone and give us a call at 503-232-8818. We have a goal for this hour of $600. We need to get the phones ringing, but more than ever, I want to encourage people to come in person. We are located at 20 Southeast 8th Street in Portland, Oregon. It's a half block south of Burnside. And because we have live in studio Fatima Bhutto, she's Benazir Bhutto's niece, and she's speaking with Cecil and Celeste about her stunning new memoir, Songs of Blood and Sword, a daughter's memoir. And you know, you actually have the opportunity later this hour to pick up your phone and talk with them and talk with Fatima and Cecil and Celeste. You know, that's an amazing opportunity that you're getting. And I'm just going to say to you, listening right now, you know that you're never going to get that kind of opportunity anywhere else.
Not at
you
all.
You know,
Lisa.
That's true.
Not
so,
at all. And if I may impose, Fatima, what is it like to be able to speak freely on commercial-free, corporate-free radio?
Oh, it's a complete delight. And I'm so honored to be here, especially during your membership drive.
Yeah, and we are offering Fatima's new book, Songs of Blood and Sword, A Daughter's Memoir, for a $75 minimum pledge. That's only $6.25 a month. And I don't want to mix my metaphors, but you can't even get a half rack of PBR for that anymore, okay? So if you're ever listening to KBOO and you think, my God, this show is changing my life, I can't believe this show, I want to get KBOO a half rack of PBR. You know what? Instead, give us a call, 1-877 877-500-5266. Make a contribution to KABU. $75 minimum pledge will get you this book. And I think it was Cecil who suggested that you can also, if you're already a member, you can also get a gift membership for someone you know, someone you love. You know what? You could actually give us a call, 503-232-8818, and buy a gift membership for Chris Dudley, the Republican candidate for governor. Why not?
Why not?
Why not
broaden his horizons?
You know?
Yes.
You can find out his address online, and I'm just suggesting anyone would love this book. Fatima Bhutto, she's a member of the most famous family in Pakistan. She's a poet. She's a journalist. This is an amazing story. And, you know, anyone, it doesn't even matter what your political point of view is, would learn and just savor this book. So I'm just saying, give us a call and get, for a $75 minimum pledge, get your copy of Songs of Blood and Sword, A Daughter's Memoir. And the number to call locally, 503-232-8818, is the local number. Toll free outside the Portland area, 1-877-500-5266. You can join online at kboo.fm. Go up in the upper right-hand corner of the homepage and click on the tip jar. But again, this is a wonderful opportunity to come in person to 20 Southeast 8th Street in Portland, Oregon. We're a half block south of Burnside. We've got these stunning, we've got pastries to offer you. We've got some coffee. Meet the producers of the radio show. You know, take a look at the station itself. Sign up to be a volunteer. This is what we offer you here at KABU, and this is an amazing opportunity. And for all the people who have started out at KABU and been trained in radio, trained in media, and gone on to other things.
Yes, like our very own Emily.
Emily Harris, who is
host
of Think Out Loud, the producer of that show. Julie Sabatier also started here. You know, there's so much that happens in this radio station, but where it really starts is with you giving us a contribution, picking up the phone, 503-232-8818. We've got t-shirts. We've got a copy of Fatima Bhutto's book, Songs of Blood and Sword, A Daughter's Memoir. Give us a call, 1-877-500-5266. And, again, it's an intelligent investment. I like to suggest that people contribute 1 hour's wage per month, okay? 1 hour's wage per month to KABU, right? It's a gorgeous investment for us. It's not that much really for you. And I have to say, when you contribute 1 hour's wage per month, you're going to be at work, you're going to be at your desk, you're having a terrible day, and then all of a sudden you can go, wait a minute, I'm going to work my KABU hour right now. And it's invigorating. It's an amazing opportunity. And also, for people who are already members, we would love it if you just stopped by, you know, pull a 20 out of your wallet, drop it on the table, or just give everybody a hug, actually, to be honest with you. So we're at 20 Southeast 8th. We're just about ready to go back to Cecil and Celeste, their amazing guest, Fatima Bhutto, talking about her memoir of Pakistan and her family's life, Songs of Blood and Sword, A Daughter's Memoir. We're speaking live in the studio with Benazir Bhutto's niece. This is what KABU is all about. And you know you've heard compelling programming behind this before. So please stop by and give us a call, 1-877-500-5266. And we are located at 20 Southeast 8th Street in Portland, Oregon. Go online to make a contribution, kboo.fm. And we're ready to go back to the show. So thanks to all who called, and stay tuned.
Thank you, Lisa. And we're speaking this morning with Fatima Bhutto, author of Songs of Blood and Sword, A Daughter's Memoir. She will speak this evening, October 4th, at the World Affairs Council-sponsored event at Powell City of Books, 1005 West Burnside, at 7:30 p.m. Continuing our conversation, we mentioned you have written about the floods in Pakistan. It has faded from U.S. headlines. You've written, compared it as to the President Bush, Katrina, and it's Zardan's Katrina.
Yes.
Tell us about what happened, what's happening now, and the government's response.
Well, these are the worst floods to have hit Pakistan in 80 years and the worst disaster in our history. The United Nations says that in terms of the destruction wrecked by these floods, it is worse in scale than the Asian tsunami, the Haitian earthquake, and the 2005 Pakistan earthquake. They've affected Pakistan from the northernmost point to the southernmost point of the country. 20 million people have been directly affected. We know that 5,000 kilometers of road have been damaged, 7,000 schools have been destroyed. Millions of acres of land, land that continues to be waterlogged. So when it will be that Pakistanis can continue, you know, an agriculturally based economy, can go back to planting the food that it needs to feed its people is really anyone's guess. And we know that 6 million people are in desperate need of food aid. More than 6 million children are at a risk of fatally contracting cholera and dysentery. And what we've seen is while the floods have raged, the government's complete absence, as you mentioned earlier. While the floods were at their height, President Zardari embarked on a personal trip. He went to Dubai, where he and his family have lived for many years. He went to France, where he visited a private chateau he owns. He went to England, and spent copious amounts of Pakistani governmental money.
Yes.
You know, that could have gone to those in desperate need of aid on this enormous trip of his. And he was criticized very widely for it.
Well, he was criticized by some of his host countries, as a matter of fact.
Absolutely. And yes, he was met by protests in most of the countries he visited that held up placards saying, you know, Zardari, largest thief of Pakistan, go back home. But yet he continued, and he returned home briefly and then went on another foreign trip to Russia. So it's almost impossible to ground the man.
Given the fact that you've got the natural upheaval going on, mm-hmm, and some political stagnation, mm-hmm, I'll try to be kind.
Yes.
I still feel that there is a positive, mm-hmm, possibility of shift that could go on there. Yet we have a relationship between the United States and Pakistan that some kind of way overshadows, mm-hmm, this positive possibility.
Sorry.
What is it you think that the United States wants, and what do you think that they really should offer, especially given, mm-hmm, this perfect invitation of the disaster?
Oh, yes. Well, you know, we know that in Pakistan's most harrowing month after the floods, was the month that saw the most drone attacks sent over, mm-hmm, by the United States. We had 25 drone flights in, you know, I guess 30 days. More than 150 people were killed. And it really would have been an opportunity for some goodwill. And it was completely lost. And while Pakistanis were suffering the enormous destruction of these floods, they had unmanned Predator drone flights bombing them as they slept. As to what America wants, you know, it's curious because Pakistan is a tremendously strategic country. We're a country that shares borders with Iran, with Afghanistan, with India, and with China. We're also a country that possesses gas, oil, coal, natural resources. We grow the food that we need to feed our people, though, of course, millions go hungry every day. And we've got a population of something like 60% of our population is under the age of 30. And, of course, we are a nuclear country.
Yes.
That's the elephant in
that
the,
is the elephant
in the room. But certainly it doesn't seem that what America does want is a democratic Pakistan, because from the beginning of our independence, we've seen America support every military dictatorship that Pakistan has ever had. In between dictatorships, they've supported every corrupt civilian autocrat that has come to power. But we haven't really seen them defend or show any solidarity with the Pakistani people. That said, I do hope very much that I can say that Pakistanis are aware that there is a difference between the American government and the American people.
Mm-hmm.
Just as I hope there is here for Pakistan. But, you know, certainly our interaction is limited. You don't see really Americans coming into Pakistan unless they're Richard Holbrooke or Secretary of State Clinton. And those are very different messages that they bring.
And so there's not a lot of hope held out for the money that's supposed to go for infrastructure,
mm-mm,
or I say government, small g, we know better, and hopefully humanitarian aid. There's not a lot of hope that that's going to be appropriately
No, because there are no balance. There's no checks and balances, and there's absolutely no transparency. So one of the things that Benazir did before her death was she and the last dictator, General Pervez Musharraf, signed into law this very odious bill called the National Reconciliation Ordinance. And what that does is it erased 20 years of corruption cases against politicians, bankers, and bureaucrats. And it contains a stipulation that will make it virtually impossible to file charges in the future against sitting parliamentarians. So when that's, you know, when you have one law for the powerful and one law for everyone else, it's impossible to check what those in power do, certainly when it comes to money.
Most definitely. You are listening to More Talk Radio here on KBOO Portland, your community connection. And we'll go to our patient callers. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hello?
Hello.
Yeah, hello. Ms. Budo, I feel so bad about the drones and the wars we are doing in the world. And I want to cry, but it's not okay to do so. But in the meantime, I'm curious about something. Maybe you can't answer, but that's all right.
I'll try.
That's all right. In Saudi Arabia, do they have the same climate of violence in that like in Pakistan? And if so, are the people there also forced to be silent about it? I appreciate you being here. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you for your call. You know, I think in some ways we might say that they do. I mean, certainly when it comes to women, we know that Saudi Arabia has very similar laws to, or Pakistan rather, has similar laws to Saudi Arabia. We have laws in Pakistan called the Hudud Ordinance that that say that a woman who commits the crime of adultery can and should be put to death. Any woman that engages in premarital intercourse can and should be put to death. And we know that's the same in Saudi Arabia. In terms of, I wouldn't be able to speak to their level of political violence. I don't think they have the same record that we do. And I might just say that at various points in the 1980s, during the dictatorship of Zia-ul-Haq, Pakistan tried to emulate Saudi Arabia more than it already has. And they made the punishment for theft amputation, as Saudi Arabia has. But what I think is wonderful is that in all of Pakistan, they couldn't find one doctor to carry out an amputation. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's, we know that's not the case in Saudi Arabia. We know that's not the case in Afghanistan. But in Pakistan, the medical community was tremendously brave and just refused. So we never had an amputation carried out.
Mm. It speaks of something about the people and
yes, and the hope that I think that Celeste mentioned earlier, I think, you know, this is a country that the world sees in a different light. And, you know, we are a country of tolerant people. You know, there are not just, Pakistan is a country of Muslims and Hindus and Jains and Christians. We even had a Jewish community at some point. It's a country of great number of ethnicities and languages and cultures. So we are not this intolerant, you know, frightening, bearded, gun-toting nation that we are portrayed to be. I think we're held back. We're not empowered to show maybe our alternate faces.
Well, let's go to our next caller. Good morning, caller. Thank you for waiting.
Hello, is that me?
That is you. Good morning.
Hi, Cecil. Hi, Celeste. This is Yaney.
Good morning, Yaney.
I was traveling on a bike trip with Cynthia McKinney this summer, where she was asked to go to Pakistan to intercede for Dr. Altia Siddiqui. And I don't know if your guest knows anything about that case, and if she did, could she comment? Mm-hmm. It was interesting that the Pakistan denied her a visa to do so, and of course at the same time her house got ransacked and burgled and her laptop got stolen, and as well as her passport, and she had to get another one. But
well, that sounds very
sinister.
I just
wondered if there would be any comment on that.
Yes, I'll try. I mean, I wasn't aware of the visa denial, and certainly this
and
horrific
anyway,
intimidation. It sounds,
and they also wanted her, Cynthia to go to the flood area.
Oh, I see.
That didn't happen. Some starlet who I don't know exactly who they are because I don't watch enough movies was able to go. But anyway, So.
Well, that's fascinating, and I hope she is able to push for a visa, and certainly I think Pakistanis would be interested in having somebody come in and see what's happening who has been denied. I think the case that you're referring to, Afia Siddiqui, has certainly reached a great amount of attention in Pakistan and has captured a lot of people's imagination because of the illegal way in which Afia Siddiqui was apprehended. You know, there have been thousands of disappearances, of rendition flights, and of illegal arrests since the war on terror started. And Afia Siddiqui's case certainly speaks to that. You know, I think her case itself is very confusing and very shadowy, perhaps. But what is certainly indisputable is that she was taken by force, she was taken illegally. And whatever crime she has committed, she should be allowed to be tried in her own country.
She was taken by force by the Americans.
Yes, absolutely.
Put in Bagram and Mozambique.
Yes.
Seems to say that she was, that he heard her cries being tortured there.
Yes, and I was just going to say, actually, that people who haven't read Mozambique's book, Enemy Combatants, certainly should pick it up, because it describes this process in which people were taken from their homes in the middle of the night for months. They were renditioned to American air bases in Afghanistan. They had no idea where they were. They were tortured. They were interrogated. They were not informed of why they were being held. This continues, certainly, in Pakistan. We've got thousands of Pakistanis whose fates we are unaware of.
Thank you for your call.
The other thing that...
Really briefly, Yaini...
The only crime she may have committed was that she disarmed an American soldier who came into her house.
Yes.
And for whatever harassment, torture, yes, terrorism that the American soldier was committing on him.
Well, yes. And, you know, I think that's most Pakistanis feel that whatever it was that she's accused of, she should be allowed to be tried in her own country. And she has the right to a fair trial and an open trial and to the right of response, certainly.
All righty. Well, thank you for your call.
Thank you.
Thank you, Yanni. And let's go to our next caller. Good morning, caller.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
And we have about 2 minutes.
Okay, real fast. There seem to be two politicians in Pakistan who are outside the established order. Mm-hmm. One is Mr. Khan, who is a former cricket player, and mm-hmm. another one is Jamshed Dosti, who I just read about this morning in The Guardian. So could you tell us about those two?
Well, you know, I think, and I'll try to be brief here again, is that we're a multi-party country. You know, mm-hmm. Pakistan has a great history of varied voices. And those two that you mentioned, Mr. Dosti and Mr. Khan, are a part of that. Any town you visit in Pakistan, you'll find there are communist parties, agrarian parties, peasant parties, land reform parties, women's movements. But the volume is turned down on these people, and we are portrayed as a sort of three-party system where you have either Benazir and her party, the Muslim League, or the army. And of course, that's simply not the case. But it's very hard for those parties to break through when there is billions of dollars given to these three established parties.
You are listening to More Talk Radio. We are speaking this morning with Fatima Bhutto, who is the author of Songs of Blood and Sword, A Daughter's Memoir. This is a fascinating interview, both because you are devoted listeners, but more importantly, you are devoted members of this community radio station. If you would like more censor-free news and information, please become a member of this radio station.
Absolutely.
Lisa.
Dig in depth. Dig in depth, not only so that you have room in your consciousness to absorb what we try to bring to you, but dig in depth into your pockets. We know times are really tough, but here's the deal. You make decisions all the time about what's valuable to you. Like I did, I don't need a landline at home. I can just carry my cell phone. Oh, that might mean I have an extra dollar for cable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this is our fabulous fall membership drive. We are asking people to pick up the phone and make an investment in this radio station. 503-232-8818 is the local number to call. If you're outside the Portland area, it's toll-free, 1-877-500-5266. We want to thank Jennifer for renewing. She's from Southeast Portland. We want to thank Linda for renewing. She's from Northeast Portland. And we super want to thank Miss Lisa for coming in off the street. We are located at 20 Southeast 8th Street in Portland, Oregon. more than ever this morning. I really want to encourage people to come in person because we have live in studio Fatima Bhutto, and Cecil and Celeste are interviewing her about her new memoir, Songs of Blood and Sword, A Daughter's Memoir. She's going to be speaking tonight in combination with the World Affairs Council of Oregon, and you know, that's a very big deal. She's Benazir Bhutto's niece. We're offering her book, Songs of Blood and Sword, A Daughter's Memoir, for a $75 minimum pledge. That's only $6.25 a month on your electronic funds transfer, but you can't get that unless you give us a call. 503-232-8818 is the local number. Go online. We are at kboo.fm. And, you know, by the way, I just want to say, Cecil and Celeste rock.
Yes.
They rock. And you need to be picking up the phone and supporting their programming. Toll-free outside Portland, 1-877-500-5266.
I don't live in Portland, Lisa. Where can I pick?
1-877-500-5266. In a minute, we're going to be going back to Fatima Bhutto speaking about her memoir of Pakistan. We're talking deep politics here. But everybody slow down just a second. You know, just in the past 2 months, Cecil and Celeste have had as guests Ray McGovern, who was a CIA analyst for 27 years, and Colleen Rowley, an FBI whistleblower, here at KBOO. Oh, my God, you're kidding.
No, we actually were very blessed to have them, and it's because members were willing to make sure we had the technology to make those connections.
Uh-huh. They also have had Kevin Gray, the author of Waiting for Lightning to Strike, The Fundamentals of Black Politics. That was around the August 28th anniversary of the 1963 March on Washington. So, and we, you know, we could tell you all the reasons that you need to be giving us a call at 503-232-8818. But we still have a couple hundred dollars to make our goal for this show. And, you know, when you have the opportunity to come in person at 20 Southeast 8th Street, while we have live in studio this astounding journalist, poet, author, Fatima Bhutto, who is one of the leaders of, you know, this is the kind of movement that KBOO is part of around the world, and you need to be giving us a call, 503-232-8818, $75 minimum pledge to get Fatima's book, Songs of Blood and Sword, A Daughter's Memoir. In just a few minutes, you have the opportunity to call and talk with her in the studio, and you need to step up to the plate. Give us a call, 1-877-500-5266. And we want to thank all the people who've called so far. Stay tuned.
Hey, before we go, let's thank our business partners, the folks who have donated goodies.
And continuing our conversation with Fatima, we thank you so much for being members of this radio station. You know, we mentioned in part in our conversation, weaving through it out, is the U.S. relationship with Pakistan. But I also want to hear some of your thoughts about this ongoing war on terror, so-called war on terror. Mm-hmm. You mentioned the U.S. drones attack on your country, and we all know how innocent people are suffering.
Absolutely. You know, it's over 1,000 Pakistanis that have been killed in these drone attacks in the last year and a half. Tariq Ali, who's a wonderful Pakistani historian and activist, you know, just recently spoke in New York, and he mentioned the fact that while the Iranian elections had happened last summer, and Neda, that Iranian woman was killed, and, you know, America went into overdrive over Neda, was the same day that American planes killed over 50 women in Pakistan. We also know that besides the drones, many Pakistanis have been renditioned. They have been taken out of their country illegally. We know that in the Balochistan province, which is a very gas-rich province in Pakistan, that it's estimated between 8,000 to 10,000 people have been disappeared since the war on terror began. So between 2001 and about 2005, thousands, really just thousands of men, whose fates we know nothing about still. Mm-hmm. 5 years later, we don't know whether they were arrested, whether they were killed, whether the Americans took them, whether the Pakistani military took them. You know, so this is a war that has really affected Pakistanis across the country, and it's a big country, and it's a war that, you know, most Pakistanis feel is an unjust war. It is an unjust and an illegal war, and it causes us a great amount of shame, I think, that our country has been used to launch attacks on Afghanistan, that we've opened up our skies, you know, and really our country to facilitate what is an illegal war.
And not only, you know, it's somewhat difficult to understand from where we sit, because Pakistan is supposed to be our ally.
Yes.
We're conducting war in the country. Yeah.
We complain of the harboring of terrorists,
yes,
you know, that our ally does. And so the idea is, if we're looking for some kind of stabilization, besides actually creating maybe an environment for democracy, what else?
You know, it's really such a dysfunctional relationship. It's not an equal relationship. Pakistan is the third front on this war, and it's not spoken about it that in those terms. Pakistan is told that they are an ally, but we are a very unequal ally. Mm-hmm. We are, you know, you heard also, you know, people say things like, when the floods hit, well, how can we help you recover before we go back to bombing you? you know, how is it that we can get you in a position where it's easier for us to kill?
Well, here's my concern. If indeed you are an ally, and we know that we're dealing with leadership that is corrupt, again, as you said, it's a confusing relationship. What would you tell the average American listener to do to help promote a healthier relationship?
Well, you know, it's not only this corrupt leadership that, in fact, makes these militant groups quite popular, because they are the only ones who come into villages and bring schools or, you know, this madrasa system, which might be your child's only way of learning how to read and write. They bring medical care. There's no access to justice. They bring these quite speedy courts, you know, that air grievances. And this is why they are popular. They're not popular in Pakistan because Pakistanis believe in their philosophy, or because, you know, they've got a very sophisticated take on world affairs. It's not that case at all, in fact. And I suppose what I would want to say is that, you know, terror is a problem that Pakistan has been living with for years, for decades, before the war on terror was imposed on us. It's absolutely in Pakistan's interest to fight terror. But this is not the way to do it. You know, this only inspires more violence. You know, when you are an ally, we're an ally state, and we saw NATO kill three Pakistani soldiers recently. And, you know, those are three soldiers, but they've been killing thousands of civilians. And it's simply not tolerable.
Let's go to a caller. Good morning, caller, and thank you for waiting.
Good morning. I just love KBOO. I'm just honored to be on here, and I'm just so glad to hear that you guys are bringing in such incredible folks to interview. Ms. Bhutto, I'm curious as to, you know, I heard you say earlier in the program that something like 60% of Pakistanis are under the age of 30. And I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about how that might be a base to work with in terms of striving for greater democracy. If you could talk about what's happening in terms of organizing on the ground. I'd really be curious to hear, you know, what you have to say about young people organizing for democracy in the region.
And community development. Good question. Thank you.
Thank you.
You know, what we just talked about, these thousands of people disappeared in Pakistan. And I think it's important to note that we don't know these numbers. We don't know that this is an issue because of human rights organizations, you know, who periodically take awards from the Pakistani government. We don't know about this because of the Chief Justice or because of the legal community, but we know because the family members of these men came out and stood on the roads. And they stood outside the Supreme Court. They stood outside local courts, outside press clubs, you know, and children, you know, sort of nieces and nephews of these men who've been disappeared, held their photograph and were beaten and were arrested. But they stood, and that's how we know. So there's enormous scope for that kind of mobilization in Pakistan. But of course, it comes with a very high price. They were very violently put down. And really kept down. We haven't seen a lot of that since 2005. I think the issue is also when you are a country where people are hungry, where you face food inflation, where the price of bread rises 900% in some parts of the country, it makes it difficult for people to come out and push for change because they have to live. That's another violence imposed on Pakistan, certainly. illiteracy is another. When people are not able to read the laws imposed on them, how do they fight them?
You're listening to KBOO Portland More Talk Radio here. We are here with Fatima Bhutto, who is promoting her book, Songs of Blood and Sword. Please be sure to join and become a member. Are you enjoying this opportunity to listen to what's happening across the waters firsthand, not through the corporate media, not through secondhand speeches, not through opportunistic politicians who are telling you what they want you to know so that you can support their attacks and their disruptions? This is KBOO giving you an opportunity to hear firsthand. Are you supporting us?
Lisa, how may people support us?
Well, Lisa had to fly away. This is Ani.
Hi, Ani.
Hi, good morning. Good morning. It's a little switch-up surprise here. but people are supporting, and we do need to hear from a couple more people right now. People like Grant, who called in this morning.
Thank you, Grant.
From Northwest Portland. And we want to thank you when you make your pledge of support, when you get into your community radio station, KBOO, by calling 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266. You'll be so glad that you did that. It's a call that connects you with your entire community just by giving a little bit of financial support to this community radio station. For $40 a year, you can be a member of KBOO. For more than that, you can be a member of KBOO. For less than that, you can be a member of KBOO. What we want is your participation. $40, I mentioned, because that's our regular membership rate, and that has been unchanged for so many years. I have to say, I've been actively involved with the station for 20 years, and I know that basic membership rate has been the same throughout that time.
It's never changed. I'm right there with you,
right?
Ani, over 20 years.
Yep, and so please do consider what you get for your $40 contribution to community radio. Of course, for your $75 contribution this morning, you could pick up a copy of Fatima Bhutto's book, Songs of Blood and Sword. And you've been listening to this fabulous interview this morning. Now, here's a wonderful international author involved in so much of the interesting power issues in the world in the Middle East, which of course is involved very much with the rest of the world. And you don't get her information, her perspective, just in a soundbite tucked in between commercials. You're getting this in-depth interview with your local community members, Cecil and Celeste, and you're getting to actually interact through your calls to the air room. So KBOO does this. KBOO brings community together from around the world, giving you unique opportunities as a listener and as a member to know that you are a part of this community resource. Give us a call, 503-232-8818, or toll free 1-877-500-5266. Online, you can click over to kboo.fm and click the tip jar in the corner to join us instantaneously. Again, $5 a month, pretty easy to do for so many people, and that can help to sustain us year-round. $5 a month or more, you can set the amount for anything you would really like, and know that your support comes into KBOO, helping to keep our budget smooth and smoothing out your budget as well. I know I contribute that way in the electronic funds transferring world, and I'm able to contribute far more that way than I would ever be able to pony up all at one time. I suggest you give maybe an hour's wage a month, like our friend Lisa was saying a little while ago. It's an easy way to give. You know that 1 hour a month, you're working for your entire community, and you can bring your support on in to 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266 or online, kboo.fm. As Lisa was encouraging folks earlier, you could also stop on by 20 Southeast 8th and pay your membership in person, see behind the scenes, and be a part of your community radio station.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Ani. And we have just a couple of seconds left, but we want to remind you, coming up on KBOO, Old Variety Hour at 9 o'clock. At 10 o'clock, it's Eric Hascadia. 10:15, Locus Focus with Community Focus.
11 o'clock, Health Watch, and then at 11:30, Madness Radio. As we wind down the show, I know there are a lot of people who are wondering, you come from a family who has led this country. Mm-hmm. Are you interested in being a leader?
No. You know, I think when we talk about Pakistan moving forward, I think we really have to decide whether we want dynasty or democracy, but they don't go together.
And you speak a lot toward democracy.
Yes. You know, I think when we talk about what it is that Pakistanis want, you know, they want to be able to engage with the political system. You know, we've got an incredibly centralized system. People want it to be decentralized. The power is devolved, not just to a provincial level or a district level, but really to a neighborhood level, to, you know, the union council level. Mm-hmm. And dynasty doesn't do that. You know, dynasty excludes, really, and dynasty negates participation. And the longer that we're stuck with it, I think I worry about what our future holds.
So you use your position to speak democracy into power.
Yes, and I also, you know, I think being outside of power, I have a freedom to say what I really think. You know, I'm not obliged to anybody. I don't owe anyone anything. And it gets me into all kinds of trouble, but I wouldn't trade it for anything.
We're speaking this morning with Fatima Bhutto, author of a fascinating book, Songs of Blood and Sword. So fascinating that I forgot to bring my book today. But she will speak this evening at Powell's City of Books, 1005 West Burnside, sponsored by the World Council Affairs of Oregon. And as we conclude our program this morning, are you hopeful for the future for your country and the world?
Yes, I'm always hopeful for Pakistan. You know, it's the government that's failed, and it's the government that we have to change. The system of government just simply isn't sustainable. But when it comes down to the people, oh, absolutely. You know, this is a country of people who were survivors and who survive because they care for each other, because they take care of each other, because the state doesn't. It's an incredibly rich country. You know, if we had transparent leadership, Pakistan would not only be able to care for its millions of citizens, but we might be able to do good work for our neighbors, to care for those around us who need help. So I think there's always space for hope.
Lots of space for hope, and especially with a country that has such a rich heritage, many people, different languages, who still find a way to pull together.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
I think the one thing we can never abandon is hope when we talk about Pakistan.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. This has been More Talk Radio with Cecil Prescott, myself, Celeste Carey, and speaking with Fatima Bhutto. We hope that you will get her book. And where, again, are you?
At Powell's tonight at 7:30. Yeah.
It will be standing room only. We suggest you get there early. Thank you so much, Fatima, for being very generous with your time.
Oh,
we appreciate
it. It's an honor to be here. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Be sure to stay tuned, as we've said, coming up here on KBOO with the Old Mo Variety Hour. Bill Resnick talks with Diane Rotvich about her new book, The Death and Life of American School System. 10 o'clock, Air Cascadia with Chris Andre and Liam Delta. Locust Focus at 10:15. Local community activists look at what's happening with the Selwood Bridge. 11 on Health Watch, the author of Depression Cure. And at 11:30, it's Madness Radio, Voices and Visions from Outside Mental Health, with guest Sasha Altman DeBrule of the Icarus Project. Stay tuned for this and more on your community connection, KBOO Portland.